So then we have to ask ourselves, well, how do we improve every minute? Is the hurried lifestyle the answer? Do we cram every minute full? And we're always running and always producing? I think that's what our culture tells us, you know. A hassle has become the norm. We're becoming a faster and faster paced society. And I don't think we realize that our pace is getting faster all the time. And it's just easy just to fall in with that pace and think that's the way we should live and not evaluate. And if we look back through the centuries, we'll realize that our pace has really changed. And this really hit me when I was reading Job yesterday. And his friends came to sympathize with him. And it says that when they got to his house, he was in such pain that they just stopped and they sat down. And for 7 days and nights, they didn't say a word. They just sat there for 7 days and nights just empathizing with him with their silence. And I thought, oh, you know, just to be able, just to sit down with a friend for one day and not say a word, in our culture, we would just think it was a terrible waste of time. So things have really changed. It's just like we're playing a giant game of beat the clock all the time. And why do you think we hurry? What are some reasons that we live hurried lifestyles? Okay, succumb into other people's expectations. Good.
I think we fail to plan or prioritize, and we just kind of go blindly, you know, grabbing at this or that, whatever seems. It's almost the tyranny of the urgent.
Yeah, we plan. We don't plan or prioritize. Good. Any other ideas?
There are many needs. We can meet needs until the job did.
So there's so many needs. Anwar Lindberg talks about how there's so much information coming to us all the time about the world's needs. We just can't handle it. And we think we should, but we can't, you know, because we're limited. Proverbs 19:2 is a really key verse, and it might be a good one to memorize. It says, "It is not good for a person to be without knowledge, and he who makes haste with his feet errs." And so if we're making haste with our feet all the time, I'm not saying that there aren't times when we have to hurry, but if we live a hurried lifestyle, then there must be some knowledge that we don't have. We're without knowledge. We're not being wise. Once there was a man, a 19th century man. He lived a very simple life. He got up when the sun came up. He ate when he got hungry. And he went to bed when the sun went down. And he heard that a neighboring village had bought a special clock, a Big Ben clock from England. So he thought, well, I want to go see this wonder. And so he went to this village, and he got there about noon. And when he got there, there wasn't anybody in the streets. The stores were closed, and all the shades, the shutters were closed. Nobody was up. And so he didn't know what was going on. So he thought, well, I'll just stick around and see what the deal is, what's going on. And so about sunset, everybody started getting up. The storekeepers opened their stores, and the children started going to school. And the housewives started washing their clothes and hanging them out. And so he went to one of the storekeepers, and he said, well, what's going on? You know, it's getting dark. And you're just now getting up and starting to live your day. And so the storekeeper said, well, you know, we have the most unusual city in the U.S. About a year ago, we got a new clock from England. And so, I don't know, before we knew it, the day started getting longer and longer. Shorter and shorter. I always get those two mixed up. I can't remember which one it is. Longer and longer. And before we knew it, the nights had become days, and the days had become nights. And we want to petition the president to give a certificate for being the most unique town in America because things are reversed in our city. And so this man went to examine the clock. And in the clock, he found sparrows that were roosting in the clockworks, and they had caused the clock to get slower and slower. And so the whole town was ruled by the tyranny of that clock. And I think that's what we do sometimes. We're just ruled by the clock. And one time I was flying back from Minneapolis, and I found this, and I cut it out. It was on the front of a magazine. And I thought, sometimes I think that's the way we are. You know, our faces are clocks. We just rule by the tyranny of the clock. But the truth is that God made the years, the days, the seasons, the months, and the minutes are man-made. God didn't make minutes. And I think one of the reasons that we live such hurried lifestyles is because this is an age of machines. And we have rockets that operate according to nanoseconds, split seconds. And so we feel like we should operate that efficiently too. that minutes are man-made, they're not made by God. And God didn't make us to be machines. We need to learn to live by events and to live in the now. C.S. Lewis says, never commit your happiness to the future. Happy work is best done by the man who takes his long-term plan somewhat lightly and works from moment to moment as to the Lord. The present is the only time in which any duty can be done or any grace received. So if we learn to live in the now and take time to see the uniqueness of each moment, then certainly that is the way to redeem the time. Well, if the hurried lifestyle isn't the answer, maybe, and we want to learn to live in the now, maybe we should become hermits. Maybe we should go up in the mountains here in Colorado, take our Bibles and meditate, take some paints and paint and be really creative and really redeem the time. And some people have done this. Beethoven was kind of a recluse, and all he cared for was giving his time to vent his creative powers. That's all he cared for. But he enriched our culture immeasurably, but yet he loved few people and he hurt many. And there was a time when he shook his fist in the face of God. Thomas Mann tells about a man, an author, who decided he would live in a sanitarium so that he would have plenty of time to write. And he describes this man as stealing time from God Almighty. And so that extreme is not the right extreme. So what we need to do is to get a balance. And the balance is a measured tread. And I just you might want to write that down. The way I define that is a moderate but purposeful pace. You're not too rushed and you're not lazy. Jesus was this way. He knew how to let things wait for 5 minutes. He had a leisure but purposeful air about his life. And how did he do that? Well, he determined to do only the will of God and nothing else. The best use of time is doing the will of God. And we see this in our proof text again. The Deuteronomy verse. It says, as your day, so shall your leisurely walk be. I think it's 33. I think that may be 25 instead of 12. I think I'm going to get that down wrong. It's in Deuteronomy 33, though. As your day, so shall your leisurely walk be. So in Ephesians 5, it says, do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. So that's key to getting this moderate but purposeful pace. And I love E. Stanley Jones' quote. He says, the surrendered, those who have determined that they want to do the will of God alone, are quietly creative and actually produce twice as much as the unsurrendered with all their fussy activity. The unsurrendered have to increase their pace to cover the fact that they have lost the way. The surrendered don't run but spend their time in walking through problems, responsibilities, opportunities, walking confidently with all his energy and power at work in them. And what a goal. You know, maybe we should just type up that quote and just put it on our refrigerators forever. E. Stanley Jones, if you want the whole quote, I can give it to you afterwards. Okay? So to live is to choose, but to live well is to choose wisely according to his will. Now, part of God's will is that we learn to live seasonally. And as you look through the Word, you will see that over and over, it talks about how God was real concerned about the right timing throughout history. And that, I think that would be an interesting study. Just as you're reading, just keep your eye out for those things about the fullness of the time and the proper time. And Jesus was the same way. Let's look at John 16:4. Would somebody read that?
But these things I have spoken to you, that when their hour comes, you may remember that I told you of them. And these things I do not say to you at the beginning, because I was with you.
So Jesus was concerned about the proper time to teach them certain things. And in John 7:6 says, the world cannot hate you, but it hates me. No, that's wrong. Jesus therefore said to them, my time is not yet at hand, but your time is always opportune. So again, he was concerned about the proper timing. And I think it's a relief to know that even though Jesus could have done everything, his whole ministry, in a day or in a month, he didn't. I don't have to do everything today. There's a proper time. And if we look at Ecclesiastes, there's several verses that talk about that. It says there is a time for everything. Ecclesiastes 3:1, there's appointed time for everything and a time for every event under the heavens. Ecclesiastes 3:11, it says everything is appropriate in its time. And then let's look at Ecclesiastes 3:17. That's a really key verse. Would you read that? Ecclesiastes 3:17.
I thought in my heart, God will bring to judgment both the righteous and the wicked. For there will be a time for every activity, a time for every deed.
And if you look at that, it indicates that God will judge us for our timing. So it's not only a matter of doing what God wants, but doing what when he wants us to do it. God's plan includes delay. And I think you've probably all experienced that. Maybe you feel like God wants you to minister to a certain woman or do certain things with your kids, but it doesn't work out right at the time you thought it would. And later on is a better time. And that just really encourages me. I don't have to do everything today. Life is seasonal. Now let me give you some practical examples of that. For instance, if you have small children, then you need to put your career on the back burner, probably, at least for a while. Maybe the Lord wants you to pursue a part-time job of some kind, but when the kids are little, just really difficult to do, and you probably shouldn't because they need you at home. Or if you have, now see, these are married examples, so maybe for the future some of y'all can use these that are single. Right now I have teenagers, and I'm finding that I just don't have hardly any time to spend with women one-to-one time. I just don't have the resources, the emotional resources, because so much goes out to the teenagers. And my heart is really with discipling women, but it's just not the season to do very much. And I'm just now beginning to get a little bit back into it by meeting with this one lady and doing scripture memory. But I do have one son that's in college now, so things are beginning to change. So then another idea that might be more applicable to you singles, instead of feeling guilty, maybe if you're not exercising all the time or sharpening a skill like tennis, if you can think in terms of seasons, maybe spring is the time to sharpen up a skill like that and really get into vigorous exercise program. Maybe the winter is the time to really study the Word, and the summer would be a season. Well, for me, in the summer, one thing I think of is reading to the children, because I would like to be reading to the kids all year, but it just seems like I can't get it done during the school year very much, so I just try to concentrate on it on the summer. And you see what I'm talking about, seasons? Instead of feeling like you've got to disciple, you've got to you've got to exercise, you've got to do in-depth study, you've got to do scripture memory, just all these things all the time. You've got to be reading, books to enhance your mental abilities. if you can think seasonally, it will help you, because there's a time for everything. And then also, you can have seasonal days. And I don't know what I would do if I didn't have seasonal days to unclutter my thinking. And what I mean by this, I'll give you an example of my schedule. Monday is my shopping day. Tuesday is housework day. Wednesday is a day for letters and spending time with my husband because he's off that day. Thursday is washing. Friday is studying and writing. And then Saturday is more of a music day for me when I teach piano. And, of course, everybody's, and Sunday's worship and rest, but everybody's schedule is going to look a little bit different. But if you know that you're going to shop on Friday, and you think of a gift you need to get, you don't have to run out right then and get it. You can say, oh, well, I'll do that Friday. And it unclutters your thinking, and it just helps that blob, So thinking seasonally. let's see. Well, there's just a time for everything. You know, there's a time to study. There's a time to give yourself to other people. There's a time to be hospitable. There's a time to receive hospitality. All those things can be done at different times. Okay. And let's get on into the subject of rest. And I consider it kind of a season of life or a season of the week. We should have one day a week to rest. And it's very important. In fact, it's one of God's most precious blessings. And a lot of times we feel really guilty if we take out time to rest. But Ecclesiastes 4:6 says, one hand full of rest is better than two fists full of labor and sorrow therewith. Work is good, but we mustn't make it an idol and just give ourselves totally to it. So we'll talk about this definition of burnout in just a minute. But William McNamara says, possibly the greatest malaise in our country today is a neurotic compulsion to work. And Tim Hansel says, dedicated Christians are too often characterized by frantic activity, fatigue, and weariness rather than love, compassion, and joy. Do you identify with that? Or do you see people that... That really speaks to me and convicts me. And I would like to recommend this book that Tim Hansel has written. It's called When I Relax, I Feel Guilty. And I think it's in the book nook. They said they would get it for me. But I think that book is a really fun book. And Vicki's going to talk to some about leisure. And he talks about leisure as well as rest and creative vacations. And I think you'll find it really balances out your life. Tim Hansel. He's in charge of Mountain Seminary, Mountain Summit Expeditions, I think is the name of it. Yeah. It's a neat book. I really recommend it. When I relax, I feel guilty. Okay. Burnout is becoming a household word in our culture today. And burnout can affect not only career women and career men, but I believe it can affect the homemaker. Because as our kids get older, there's just more and more to do, and we worry, and then our parents get sick, and we've got to spend time with them. And so burnout can happen to anyone. And a definition of burnout is a depletion of an individual's resources, attrition of his vitality, energy, and ability to function. Have any of you ever experienced something like this or known someone that did? You have experienced it personally? Okay, I have too. Okay, so you know what I'm talking about. The mechanical image for burnout is a motor grinding to a smoking halt, or the charred shell of a remnant of a building that's been burned on the inside. And that's the way a person becomes when he experiences burnout. And I think when we're younger, we think you've got so much energy, that could never happen to me. But when you start getting 40, like me, then you realize that the resources aren't, you know, they're limited. But what does God say about the situation in our country? Let's look at Psalm 127:2. It says, it is vain for you to rise up early, to retire late, to eat the bread of painful labors, for he gives to his beloved in his sleep. Another translation of that, he gives to his beloved sleep. And so the Lord really thinks that overwork is vain. And regular seasons of rest during God's plan for his people. And if we would keep to these regular seasons of rest, I don't think we'd ever experience burnout. And we know that regular seasons of rest are in God's plan because they're part of the Ten Commandments. And let's look at the Ten Commandments. Let's look at the one about rest, Exodus 20, 8 through 11. I'll just read that for the sake of the tape. It says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. But the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter, your male or your female servant, or your cattle or your sojourner who stays with you. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day, and he made it holy. Now you can look at that commandment and you can say, well, we don't live under the law. No, we don't want to be legalistic, so we don't have to worry about that. But if you just completely throw it out, then you'll have to say, well, it's okay to murder, it's okay to lie, it's okay to steal. And if you think about it, you know, 10 commandments for the whole of life isn't very much. And I don't think that God would have included one commandment that wasn't necessary for today. So it's crucial that we have regular seasons of rest. The principle of rest is all throughout the Word, and it's in the 10 commandments. Paul Tournier had a patient that came to him during the war, during World War II, and he told him that he'd been offered this really strenuous job on the wartime front, and he asked Dr. Tournier if he thought he should take the job. And so Dr. Tournier's counsel went like this. He said, well, if you can come home on the weekends and rest and meditate, then take the job. But if you can't, don't take the job because you can't handle it. And so the man did take the job, and on every weekend he would come home and spend time with his wife and rest and get, you know, think about things and get perspective on the problems. And then he was strengthened and he was able to go back to the job. So the principle is that the greater stress you have in your job, in your motherhood, in your ministry, then the more rest and meditation you need. And Billy Graham said that he wished that he had spent more time in the last 10 years in rest and meditation so he could handle the problems and things that he needed to better. So if we throw ourselves into the fray, you know, wholehearted, that's okay. But we need to pull back and take time to rest and get perspective and meditate and pray. Freudenberger, there's a book called Burnout, The High Cost of High Achievement. And he says that no one can produce constantly without replenishing his resources. So practically, what can you do? Well, determine how much time you need to rest or to get time away. Determine what is restful for you. And then maybe do things like schedule days of purposeless mornings. Whenever I just get really exhausted, I'll just spend a whole morning where I've scheduled nothing. You know, I just kind of wander around. Go outside and take a walk, you know, do whatever I feel like. Maybe you might want to go window shopping without any, you're not going to buy anything, just do it for fun. You might want to listen to Mozart symphonies or work on the quilt you haven't worked on for 2 years. One time I was speaking to a pretty hostile group. I was speaking on the woman's issue, and that's always a really volatile subject. And I was so uptight that I just decided I just couldn't study anymore. And so I took the whole evening off and went to see the Song of Norway movie about Grieg's life. And the music was just so beautiful. It refreshed me more than any studying could have done. And things went a lot better the next night. And then another thing I've done that you might think is kind of strange, but I really think it's valid, is I've taken a couple of days away from the family. And in fact, what I've done is I've come up here to the Glen, and I've just cooked my own meals and prayed and rested for a whole 2 days. And it seems like when I've come back, I've been so much stronger that all my family does better. And a family just needs a mother to be strong, you know. And I think getting away like that is valid. We tend to feel guilty for it. But everybody else needs rest, and we do too. It's hard to get it at home sometimes, all the time. How can we stand strong and wise in the midst of every conflict? That strength I will find in aloneness that calms the mind, in peaceful times where God and I sort out life and touch the sky. Just getting time with God and resting. Vicki wants to share some things with us from a single perspective about, especially about leisure time.
Okay, I'm
Vicki, and I'm one of those kind of people that rushed around like crazy and fell apart. So then I had to take a couple of years off and sort things out and realize what was important to God, and realized how much had been done in the flesh. It had been good things, but done in the flesh, because God had not given me those things to do. He never gives me more than I can handle, more than I can do, or more than I have resources for. And why I think that I should do all those things, my problem is I needed to feel important and I needed to feel like my life was making a significant contribution. Pride. I still think that my life needs to make a significant contribution, because God has made me for a very good reason, to love Him and to love others and to bring them to Him. But it's all within reason. And so leisure is a big part of my life now, and I love it. There are things that I can do that totally separate me from my worries. I like to do needlework, but a lot of times I find that if I stay home and I do my needlework, I'm sitting there and I go faster and faster because I'm worrying about all these things I have to do. So sometimes I just have to get away. I have to go fishing, camping, totally separate from the responsibility. So when I come back, I feel refreshed and I'm ready to hit it. And Jesus even taught about getting away in Mark. This wasn't a successful story of getting away, but his intent was right. It's Mark 6:30. It says, the apostles gathered around Jesus and reported to him all that they had done and taught. And that's just like us. We come to God. This is what happened today. God, thank you that this is where I'm involved. This is what I'm doing. And then he says, then because so many people were coming and going that they did not even have a chance to eat, he said to them, come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. That's what God wants us to do. Really get some rest with him. To enjoy him, to enjoy our lives, and to enjoy ourselves. And that the relationship we have with him. And it's very, very fun to do that. And then that book, Feeling Guilty When You Do It, is not right. Guilt will almost negate the whole purpose of being there, because it takes your strength to do it. So if you feel guilty, you might as well not go. What you need to do is make right decisions with God. Allow your guilt to bring you to a change of attitude and actions, but then don't feel guilty. When you've made the decision to get away, then do it and enjoy it. Don't negate it. And one thing I like to do is I feel like there are so many needs and there are so many people who need friendship and who are lonely and just I could help there, that a lot of times I take friends that I would like to spend some time with me. And so it doesn't turn out to be a disciple-making trip or an evangelistic trip or whatever. I just want to spend some time with another person, and I'm a friend. So we'll go fishing together or something, and they totally enjoy it. And they see me responding in a natural way to life. And so it builds relationships, but it doesn't take any strength from me, but it gives the opportunity to do two things at once when I don't need time alone. But I do think that we do need time alone, and make sure that you get it. I've heard especially mothers need that. So it's great. I feel that as a single person, time management is something we order our lives in, but we waste a great deal of that time. And I want to read you a few sections of Scripture that shows the importance of being a single and how to use our time. And it's 1 Corinthians 7 is the first part. Starting at 32 through 35. He says, I would like you to be free from concern. An unmarried man is concerned about the Lord's affairs, how he can please the Lord. But a married man is concerned about the affairs of this world, how he can please his wife. And his interests are divided. An unmarried woman or a virgin is concerned about the Lord's affairs. Her aim is to be devoted to the Lord in both body and spirit. But a married woman is concerned about the affairs of this world, how she can please her husband. I am saying this for your own good, not to restrict you, but that you may live in a right way in undivided devotion to the Lord. And I feel like Ruth Ann talked about, and there are seasons of life, and I feel like there are very few
men and women who will remain single their whole life, at least here in the States, just because naturally that's how it works out. But when you are single and taking advantage of that time, we are to be undistracted. Most of the singles I know are standing around waiting for something to happen. Prince Charming or the right wonderful looking woman to come along. And we don't utilize the time. We are distracted by the cares of the world. So we might as well have those four children and we have to cook for and do laundry for because of we're not utilizing our time any better. So in the season of being single, whether it's for a few years or your whole life, boy, ask yourself if you're using your time so that you are undistracted. And is it undistracted devotion to the Lord? And one way you can ask yourself that and answer realistically is how you spend your free time. What are you thinking about? Are you thinking about ways to serve God and the body of Christ, or are you thinking of how you would like to be served and how you wish things were different? And one thing that Jesus gave was a constant example of sacrificial giving. And I feel like we don't have any idea what that means. Singles have the potential to be the most selfish people there are, just because they don't have any responsibilities. I don't have to get up at night with sick children or young babies. I don't have to do somebody's laundry because they're out of shirts. I don't have to come home and cook for anybody if I don't want to. And if I'm in a bad mood, I go into my room and I shut my door. And my life can be ordered like that, and I can be very selfish. So what we need to do is look at Jesus' life and see how he served, how he used his time. And in Mark 6, again, using the same passage, we'll look at what happened after he said, come, let's go to a quiet place and get some rest. So, and starting in verse 32, it says, so they went away by themselves in a boat to a solitary place. But many who saw them leaving recognized them and ran on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. When Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, what did he do? Turn around and set the motor the other direction? No, he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began teaching them many things. He sacrificed his time. He sacrificed his resources. And do we do that? Or do we just give our 10% of our money to our church, to the navigators, or to whatever we give to? Or do we really give sacrificially of our time and ourselves? And I think as a single person, that's the only thing that's going to make us like Jesus if we really take it in how we use our time, is that if we give sacrificially. A lot of times I'm asked to give, and the reason I do is because my friends will think that I'm a gracious person and that I'm really available to them. But it's really only when it's convenient. And I like to feel important, and I want them to think I'm terrific. But when God and I sit down and he says, Vicki, you have this evening free. You could either watch television all evening, you could do your cross stitch all evening, or you could go and spend the time with this other person, or you could spend time with me. What are my choices? Many of us watch TV all evening. It's just the way, you know, our society subtly creeps up into us. And so we need to just ask God how to give sacrificially. Remember the widow who gave the mites, it was all she had? Jesus said that she gave out of her poverty, and so her gift was greater than anybody else's. Let's make sure our gift is greater than anybody else's, because we're giving out of the sacrificial giving that we need to, out of not just the things that are convenient. And in 1 John 3, I'll read you one more quick passage here. This is so neat. It says, and this is a great comfort to a single person who maybe at times feels lonely and maybe all the time feels lonely and feels unloved. It says, this is how we know that what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers. If we have material possessions and see that your brother is in need but has no pity on him, how can the love of God be in him? Dear children, let us not love with words or tongue, but with actions and in truth. This, then, is how we know that we belong to the truth and how we set our hearts at rest in his presence, whenever our hearts condemn us. For God is greater than our hearts, and he knows everything. God knows our hearts. He knows the longings. He knows the desires. And he is greater than those. And so we can give our life to people and be very happy if we never marry, or if we marry later, or if we marry soon. God knows our hearts, and we can be content right where we are, even if we have several boys or children at home. That if we set a lifestyle now of managing our time, of giving, and being content where we are, I think we'll be able to be content when we're married as well, even when we have those times of being tired and being asked to serve beyond our endurance. So.
Back to you. Thank you. I'm really glad that it worked out that Vicki was going to be here, since she's single, and you know, we'd have so many singles. If we're going to do any of these things, if we're going to learn to live undistractedly as singles, if we're going to choose a measured tread for our lifestyle, if we're going to choose to live seasonally, we're going to have to plan. We're going to have to think and pray and plan. And Psalm 50:23 says, "To him who orders his way aright, I will show the salvation of God." So planning, ordering our way aright. And then if we look at Ephesians 5 again, we see that this is in there too. It says, "Therefore, be careful how you walk, not as unwise men or women, but as wise." And in order to be careful how we walk, we're going to have to plan. Because if we don't, everybody else's expectations just crowd in and take up all our time, and we've already mentioned that. So let's talk about how to plan, how to think through specific goals and specific priorities. And I've been a goal setter for a long time, ever since I came around the Navigators, and that's been over 20 years. And I've done it different ways. And when I started working on the material for this these time articles several years ago, I began to realize, well, I'm not sure I've even tried to think about what God's goals are in the Bible for each Christian. What are the main goals that he has for us? Maybe that's the way I should go instead of some of these other categories I was using. And so I'd like to share with you what I came up with. First of all, I thought of Matthew 22:37, and let's turn to that. I'd like somebody to read that. Matthew 22:37.
Jesus replied, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind."
And that's the first and the greatest commandment. So that's got to be one of God's greatest goals for us. Maybe it is the greatest, that we love him with all our heart and with our soul and with our mind. And the more we get to know him, the more we love him. So that's one main category, I think, that we always have to consider when we're thinking about goals that we want to set, getting to know God. Okay. And the second one was Romans 8:29. Let's turn to that. Can somebody read that? Do you want to read it again? You got a nice loud voice.
"For those God foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the likeness of his Son, that he might be the firstborn among many brothers."
So he's predestined us to be conformed to the image of his Son. And that means that we're going to grow mightily in character. And so that's one of God's great goals for us, is to grow in character, to continually be growing spiritually and in character. So the next category could be character development. And then the third one is in Matthew 25. And I've done a lot of study on this passage. It's about the servants that the Lord gave the talents to, the five talents and the two talents and the one talent. And this passage is packed. Let me just read portions of it. And the one who had received the five talents came up and brought five more talents, saying, Master, you entrusted five talents to me. See, I have gained five more talents. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful slave. You were faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master. And then down in 24, And the one also who had received the one talent came up and said, Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow, and gathering where you scattered no seed. And I was afraid, and went away, and hid your talent in the ground. See, you have what is yours. And what did the Lord say to that? He called him a wicked, lazy slave. In verse 30, he says, Cast out the worthless slave into the outer darkness. In that place there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Now you have to say that this is a crucial thing in our lives. And the way, there are different ways to interpret this, but the talents that the Lord, the talents that the Lord gives us are the resources that he gives us. The time, the money, but also the abilities that he gives us. Special abilities, the gifts, the spiritual gifts, the talents. And the Lord says if we don't multiply those for him, if we don't develop them for him, that we're wicked, lazy slaves. He didn't want us just to take it and hide it, or take it and not develop it, but do something with it for him. And so this is a third category, ministering with our gifts, multiplying our gifts for him. And we're going to talk a little bit more about this, and I'll give you some specific examples to get you going. But first of all, let's talk about the value of goals and the dangers of goals. The value of goals is that they help you be single-minded and focused. Someone said about Beethoven, they were putting a monument at his grave, and this is what they said. He who lies here was possessed, seeking one goal, suffering and sacrificing for one purpose. Thus did the man go through life. If there are some of us who can still feel a sense of total dedication in these fractured times, let us meet at his grave. And certainly we can learn from his total dedication to one goal. And Paul, of course, was single-minded for the Lord. He said, This one thing I do, forgetting what lies behind and reaching forward to what lies ahead, I press toward the goal for the high prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus. And he wanted God's goals for his life. Now, the danger in goals, the main danger is non-flexibility. You know, if we write down, well, I want to do this year, or in the next 5 years, I want to accomplish this. Sometimes we're not flexible when God wants us to be flexible. And we can fall into the culture's expectations as we set our goals. We could set goals for making a certain amount of money. We could set goals even within our church, maybe, for things that we feel like the church would have us do, and we're not really seeking God's goals for us. We can always be preparing to live rather than living in the now because we're working on this goal way out here. And we can become inconsiderate of people and not be willing to take that time on that phone call because we're working on our goals, you know. I think that a godly setting of goals is somewhat like a soccer game. You know where the goal is. You know these three goals that God has for us for sure. And you may make strategies for reaching that goal. But as you're going along through life, you have to continually reroute because God brings different things into your lives that you didn't expect. And I think about Abraham, and he knew what God's goal was for him. He knew that he was to have a child. He was to have millions of descendants. But at one point, his short-term goals were not what God would have. You know, and he decided he was going to have a child by Hagar, and he got in trouble. And he needed to wait on the Lord and be flexible because God didn't do it the way and the time when he thought God was going to. And then a better example of being flexible is Paul. He knew that God's goal for him was to be a missionary to the Gentiles. And so he was going to Bithynia and take the gospel. But then God appeared to him in a dream and said, No, I don't want you to go there. I want you to go over to Macedonia. And so he flexed and he went God's way. So it's kind of like a soccer game. Set a goal. Yeah. And but lately, I really like these a lot better. They're more general. There was some value in those. But I got so specific, you know, I'd have 10-year goals and 5-year goals and yearly goals and monthly goals and daily goals. And I was going bananas with goals and discipling and all kinds of things. And it was just too complicated. And so lately, the Lord has led me to set simpler goals without so many detailed steps. And let me share a few of those with you to give you an idea. Under getting to know God, right now, my goal for this year is to concentrate on meditation. And then my monthly goal this month has been to really sharpen up about 20 or 30 verses that I've had in my verse pack for about a year that I didn't know very well. And so I could really meditate on those. And then under the character development, my goal is to grow in faith, learning what it means to live by faith. And I was thinking about that last night, and I was thinking, well, I really don't have a short-term goal for that right now. So over the night, I think the Lord gave me some ideas. And so what I want to do this month is just praise God for answers to prayer, that praise that I'm going to, well, things that He hasn't answered yet, but I want to trust Him to do for my kids. Two of them are at Eagle Lake these 2 weeks, and I'm praying specific things for them. And I just want to praise God right now that He's going to do those things, by faith. And then ministering with our gifts, I have a goal to work at 20 Bible studies for my teenagers. And my goal for this year, and then for this month, I want to work at one on the fruit of self-control. We're working on the fruits of the Spirit. We're doing all the fruits of the Spirit, not just that one. Okay, so that's an idea. And one thing that I do, and then I want Vicki to share what her goals are like. It's funny how, well, the tyranny of the urgent, you know, the urgent things, you may decide what your priorities and what your goals are, and then if you don't keep reminding yourself of those things, they'll just kind of go by the wayside because they're important, but they're not urgent, you know. And so one thing I do that's really helpful is I'll write out the three main priorities for my season of life. Like right now, it's meditation, living by faith, and working in those Bible studies. And I try to, you know, look at those every day or so and say, you know, have I done these three things? And that helps me a lot. And then I don't need to worry about the other things that don't get done because I've done the priorities. See. Would you share what some of your goals are right now?
My current goal is kindly helping them, I just want to shake them and say,
this is what you need to do. And so I really would like to work on kindness. I've done a study just by looking up kindness, doing cross-references and different things on there. But I feel like it's not built into my life. So what I'm doing right now is just watching my responses to things so that I can be quick to pick up when I need to change. And so that's my character goal. My spiritual goal, or loving Jesus, is the fact that I do want to love Jesus and I want to feel like it. And I think that in Him becoming my husband, I need to make that very real. So I've read some books by people who I feel like had a real heart for God, who really knew Him well and really had that close walk, like Amy Carmichael. She's a favorite author of mine, and just to pick up on the things she knew about Him. Also, I visualize Jesus with me, and because He said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. And so He's in my office with me. He's in my relationships with people, and it's a standard for what I choose to do, what's right and wrong. But it's also very wonderful to have a constant companion. And then as far as developing gifts, I'd like to develop in the area of counseling. And so I've been to Larry Crabb's counseling seminar a couple of times and read his books. And so I'm taking some women at work through and seeing if I can teach it. So it's helping me to learn how to teach as well as to really put the methods into practice. So that's...
Everybody's will be different. I don't want to spend a lot of time on, but we're running out of time, so I was going to give you a few things on time savers, but let me share just one or two things with you that are real. I don't have a lot anyway, but if you start the night before, you know, it's evening and the morning were the first day. And so if you've got a lot to do the next day, if you just kind of even just barely get it started the night before, you'll be into it and you'll do a lot better the next day. You know, for instance, if you're going to do Bible study the next morning, you know, if you just read the passage the night before, then you'll get a lot more done the next day. And you can do that with anything. You know, if you're going to shop the next day, if you start, even just barely start your list, it helps your mind get going. You meditate on it during the night, so what happens? So that's a real key time saver. And then another thing is to have a notebook. And I forgot to bring my notebook today. I couldn't believe I did that. But I try to carry it most everywhere I go. And how many of you use the day timer? Okay. Well, it's a thing that you can order. It's sheets. It has calendars in it and pages for do lists on every day. Yeah, pass that around. I use a bigger one. You can get different sizes. You can get big ones. Yeah, I used to use a great big one. Or you can use this one this size, or you can use a smaller one. And it has pages for every day that you have. You can write in your do list. It has pages for addresses, pages for budgeting. And that just keeps you, you know, keeping it all in one place really helps instead of having little pieces of paper everywhere. When I get really hurried, that's what I do, is I start writing little pieces of paper everywhere, then I can't find anything. And then some of my other categories in my notebook, just try to keep, if you have a notebook and you just keep everything in there, keep your quiet time notes, your prayer list, your goals, you know, and whatever fits your lifestyle. Like I have a whole section for ideas on writing, you know, and I just, you know, try to keep everything in that one notebook, and then you stay organized, you know, phone numbers. And then another thing is a file system. And if you work, you may have a file system at work, but maybe you need one at home too. And just file everything, you know, file catalogs, addresses, children's papers, Bible studies, just on and on and on, so that you can put your hand on it when you need it. You know, and that's something you have to keep working with all the time, but it really helps, file system. And then, of course, another thing I want to work with you on before we, in just a minute, and that is to write down everything you have to do, just everything, I mean, from washing to doing Bible study, and then put all of that big conglomeration of things into three columns, high, medium, and low priorities. And it's easy to feel like everything is top priority, isn't it? But it's not. You can put them in those columns and then number them, and that gives you a sense of freedom if you get the top ones done. And we'll start working on that in just a minute. Now, the key thing is always our time with the Lord every day. Habakkuk 2:1 says, I will stand at my guard post. I will station myself at the rampart. I will keep watch to see what he will speak to me. And if we do that every day and we really listen to the Lord, Lord, what is it that's really important for me to do today? I found that usually he'll tell me one thing, just one thing. It may be scrubbing the floors. It may be making a phone call. It may be writing a letter. It may be talking to a child about something. But if you do that one thing, then you've done the important thing. You need to worry about the other things. And I just had to remember that this morning. There were two things I totally forgot that seemed so important. And I just had to, because I was meeting with someone for breakfast and then coming here, had my mind in the workshop, and I just have to trust the Lord that those things will be taken care of. And I was going to spend some time on timeless activities. I won't spend as much time as I thought I would, but this is my favorite part of the whole study, and I call it beyond time, the ideas. And there are activities that when we're involved in them, we lose all sense of time. And let me just ask you, what are some activities that when you're involved in those things, that time just stands still?
Doing something special with the kids.
Doing something with your kids. Okay.
Anything that involves laughter, hearty laughter.
Yeah. Laughter.
Okay. Sometimes you can't orchestrate that, but it's true.
Yeah. That's usually with people, isn't it? Okay. What else?
Time alone with God.
Time alone with God, okay.
Time alone with my husband.
Time alone with your husband, okay. What about your creative things? If you're involved in something creative, do you lose sense of time?
Being out exercising or out in the countryside, you know, just having a relaxing time. Uh-huh. Whether it be skiing or sports or hiking.
Yeah, if it's with people mainly or is it alone or?
Well, sometimes alone. Uh-huh. I mean, if you're going to spend time with God, sometimes the best places.
Yeah, out in nature, so you're really with the Lord. It seems like as I've done workshops and thought about this, there are always three categories of things that seem timeless. One is time with people, one is time with God, and then the third one is creativity. If you get involved in something creative, you lose all sense of time. And God is timeless, and I think that He wants to encourage us and share some of that timelessness with us by encouraging us to be more and more involved in those three activities, especially because there's eternal quality about all three of them. I really like 1 Peter 3:8 says, never lose sight of the fact, dear brothers, that time is not the same with the Lord as it is with us. To Him, a day may be as 1,000 years. And you can have a day like that where it's just timeless. You know, you lose all sense of time. And I like what C.S. Lewis said about that. He said, the timeless becomes an eternal present in 2 Peter 3:8, there where we're talking about one day is as 1,000 years in the Lord's sight. The timeless becomes an eternal present. The eternal meets us in a day, a minute, or a second, giving us our hope finally to emerge from the tyranny, the unilinear poverty of time, to ride it, not to be ridden by it. And I think the more we give ourselves to people and to time with the Lord, and even to creative things, the more we'll be in touch with the eternal. And the reason I feel like creativity is important, and I'd like to spend a lot of time on this. I'm a pianist, and I'm interested in writing. And I used to think it wasn't important. But, you know, the Lord is the creator, and we reflect His image in a unique way by being creative. And E. Stanley Jones says, when we cease to create, he says, we are made by the Creator for creation. And when we cease to create, we degenerate. And if we're involved, we can be creative not only by doing things like needlework or composing or painting. We can be creative just by thinking up things that are different. You know, like, I think, what is your first name?
Norma.
When Norma says when she does something really special with her kids, you know, that there's a sense of timelessness, and probably partly what she's talking about is something creative, something different. You know, maybe riding bikes to church instead of riding in a car, that's creative. Maybe making a homemade part for a recorder. You know, there's all kinds of creativity. And I think that the reason people have thought it isn't important is because there is a destructive kind of creativity. You know, the painter who paints and he depicts chaos, you know, or the crook who's very creative in getting around the law like we see in so many movies. I mean, that's creative, but it's destructive creativity. And our creativity should be, as Edith Schaefer says, in the mainstream of God's creativity. And then it glorifies Him. And what would we do without music in our worship services? You know, if we decided that's not worth anything, then we certainly wouldn't be rich like we are with the creativity that God's given us. So I want to encourage you in that. It encourages other people. And I've really struggled with that. But I've really more and more come to the conclusion that the Lord can use my music and my writing to minister for Him. And just to keep that in mind and be willing to give some time to that. It's exciting. Okay, so what I would like to take the rest of our time doing is just get started on our application sheet and then give you some time to, as we're doing that, just any questions that you think of, ask, because I want to get, you know, feedback, because I don't know what you're thinking. What I want you to do is to look at, I think it's on the back of that. No, it's on the front. At the bottom it says, categorize all your activities under one of these columns. What I want us to do is just to brainstorm, just to throw out everything you can think of. I'll write it down. We're going to write down all of our activities is what we're going to do. Now, if one of these activities isn't yours, don't write it down, but this will just kind of get you going. Okay, just holler out everything you have to do. Clean, okay? Keep them shopping, okay? Keep them coming.
Exercise.
Cook. Exercise. quiet time? Come on.
Date.
Okay. That's when you're married. You gotta schedule that in, or it doesn't happen. Okay. Bible study. Yeah, I think that, why don't we not put in the things that are scheduled, I mean, like a Bible study that's on our calendar and we have to be there. Let's do the more discretionary time, okay? Carpool? You carpool?
Not yet.
Oh, your kids are little. Okay. Now, I know you're busier than that.
I am weed and water. What is that?
Weed, okay. Yeah, gardening.
Phone calls.
Okay.
This is the paperwork filing.
Yeah. Like bills and paperwork.
Letters.
I'm going to put planning, because we need to put in a time for planning, okay? Okay, individual time. It's one of my top priorities right now. Time. One-to-one time with people, do y'all?
Mm-hmm.
Discipling.
Discipleship center.
Huh? Discipleship what?
Discipleship,
yeah.
Recreation.
Recreation. Leisure, right? What about rest? What about nap? I forgot to tell you that I take a nap every day.
Oh,
30 minutes a day.
Really?
I thought that might help somebody. But my 14-year-old said, Mom, I hope when I'm your age, I don't have to take a nap. I said, well, I think part of it is I'm so intense that I just have to have that to make it through the day. Reading. Okay. Maybe choir. Or is anybody in a choir? Because that's a scheduled activity. For me, I would have to put down piano practicing,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it's discretionary.
Okay. Hospitality.
Good. Sports and concerts, maybe. Yeah, because those are kind of seasonal. And you have to rearrange your schedule when you get into those seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see what else I've got on here.
When you do shopping, there's grocery and there's personal for clothes and mm-hmm. drugstore and there are all different kinds. Do you do that all in one
day? I do it all in one day. That's my goal. Is to, you know, then it just can handle the clutter of the thinking. When I can't, I get really bothers me. But I think we could put it all under there, probably. I've got mending. Family time, maybe.
Could be ironing.
Ironing. Uh-huh. Do we put washing?
Mm-hmm.
I'll put laundry. Okay, I think this pretty well covers it. You may want to put down things that are unique to you. But then now what we want to do is to put them in those columns of high, medium, and low priorities. Okay, now what I'm going to do is just go through and show you how I did it to give you an idea of how to do it. Now I put meditation, quiet time, exercise of faith, communication with Bob, Bible studies for kids. I put those five there because they're my goals for this year. I forgot to tell you about number four, but... those are my goals for this year. And of course, the quiet time isn't, but it's just something I always want to keep in my mind that it's up at the top. And so I put them as the top priorities. And then I put plan as number six, because if we don't plan, nothing else is going to get done in the proper seasons and proportions. Okay? And then I put individual time with kids, and that's high on my list right now because of the ages of my kids. It just seems like I have to get them out of the house to have a good conversation with them. You know, I understand that. And I put cooking before any of the other household things because my family's more concerned with the food than they are the house. And then I put washing before I put the house cleaning because they're more concerned with clean clothes than they, especially my 14-year-old girl.
Yeah.
And I put rest up pretty high because I just seems like I need a, I have a physical problem that I just requires a lot of rest. And at certain times in your life, you might not need to put it that high. Or maybe you just need to work on it. You know, you're approaching a burnout point. You need to, maybe you need to put it up number one. You know, I put hospitality. And the reason mine is so low there, well, at one time it was at the very bottom of a low a couple of years ago. And that was because, two reasons. One is because we were redecorating our house. It was an awful mess. Okay, and it was for a long time. And second is that's not our, it's not one of our strengths, one of our real gifts. And so it's never really very high. Like, now, if someone has a gift of hospitality, it should probably be in this first column someplace. See? So where your gift is, it should be in a higher column. If your gift is evangelism, maybe you should have witnessing to your neighbors in the first column. Are there any questions about that? Oh, okay. Is that very...
There has to be room in your schedule for impulsiveness, does there not? You know, like someone will stop by and hospitality for me is very simple. When someone stops by and just say, hey, why don't you stay for dinner? Good. That kind of thing. And it happens a lot. We're in a rural kind of setting. And so people will just be around and they'll kind of stay late. So you say, hey, I'll put two more potatoes on stay.
That's great.
Okay. So... impulsiveness, you know, it'd be hard for me to prioritize that because it happens when it happens.
Well, two things I think of. Sometimes that could get out of the hand if you hadn't thought it through and you realized.
Why?
Because right now I can't ask them to dinner because of the priorities right now. And
sure, because you promised your kids you would do something before. Yeah.
Or maybe I'm just exhausted, and you know. And then the second thing I think of is if we are basically trying to keep a moderate purposeful pace, then we'll have room for those impulsive things that the Lord lets happen. People that have needs or.
Sometimes those impulsive things for me too are forced relaxation. I do that when I want to be able to sit down and just do nothing because I know if they're there, I will do nothing. That sounds really bad, doesn't it?
No, it sounds great. I love it. Because most of us aren't that, you know, we're just real production oriented. And
that's what I am. But see, you can't produce if someone's there for dinner.
Right.
You can't be, you know, you can hurry dinner when your family's there and hurry it through and get done and get busy doing what you want to do after dinner. But if, you know, I find that for me, if I invite guests to just stay, it's no big deal. I don't have to go through fuss and frenzy getting dinner ready. They already know what's
so
on.
So you enjoy it more.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's
just
great.
Enjoy it.
I think that's part of being flexible, and it's part of being keeping the people first, people making people important. You know, they're the priorities. I think that's great.
Do you have any suggestions? My husband's a pilot for a hospital. He's supposed to work two days, two nights, and two off.
He's a pilot for a hospital?
For a Falcon hospital. Because of the fact that all three of the reserves, the schedules are constantly being changed, and I may not know 2 or 3 days ahead of time if he's going to be home on Tuesday day or home Tuesday night or off Tuesday. Mm-hmm. Our life is that way. And it really is hard for children and having no schedule.
Yeah, ours is a little bit that way because my husband's a doctor, you know, and I never know when he's going to be home for dinner.
How did you handle that? How do you cope with that?
Well, we just go ahead and have dinner at 6 usually, or 6:30. We just go ahead and have it with whoever's there. And I can't cope with always having to wait and wait and wait till 7 or 8. Or I think some doctor's wives will do that, but I'm so glad I have a microwave because then when he comes home, I just stick it in the microwave. But we just go ahead and have our family dinner and just keep on schedule. You're just asking...
It's really hard to have any sort of schedule. And when you don't know more than, say, 3 or 4 days sometimes ahead of time.
Yeah.
If he's going to be home in the day goes a lot differently than if he's at work.
So he's at home how much?
Probably half of all the days he ends up being home during the day.
That's a unique situation. I wish one of the Nav wives whose husbands are home a lot, you know, who, like, I think of Kay Hill, you know, she, Lewis is a home lot. So it's such a different situation when your husband... I know that one day that Bob's home on Wednesdays, I just kind of go crazy. I think now I'll tell Bob, I just got to get these letters done, so could we, you know, I'll work till 10 or 10:30 and then we'll walk or whatever you want to do. But I really have trouble, it's hard for me because I'm so structured, you know. I guess if you can plan the days, you know he's not going to be there, and be structured, and then when he is there, just be available, you know. It's sort of a lordship thing, I guess, just being willing to be available to our husbands. Do y'all have any, do you think of anything? Any ideas on that?
It seems to me like for kids, I know my kids function far better when there is some semblance of a schedule. During vacation and stuff, everything kind of falls apart because we don't keep a schedule. And so I know one thing my husband and I talked about this summer, we said he's an educator. Mm-hmm. So we have a span of about a month and a half that he's home, okay? All the time. Mm-hmm. And so we said, we're going to keep a semblance of a schedule. And we sat down as a family with the kids and planned priorities. We laid down the things we had to do. Like, there's certain things on the house that have to be done in the summertime, certain things on the farm that we have to accomplish with the animals. And there's certain things that have to be done. So we listed those, the have-tos. We listed the things that would be nice to have done but aren't, you know, it doesn't crucial if they don't get done. Then we listed the things that we wanted to do. We listed highest priority on recreational things that the kids chose. And it seems to me that if some way you could do that for your life, for every day, because your days are always going to change. If the kids know that when they come home from school, a certain thing's going to happen, my kids are just far, far happier and more content. If I am not home and I rush in after the buses come home, they're really distraught.
Yeah, and they
really like me there. They like that continuity and the consistency. I function better with it.
Yeah, I know. My kids will fuss if I say a lot of times, well, we're going to do such and such. But then when they do it, they're so much happier. I mean, even at their age, you know, So with little ones, you can have one thing I do, even with the kids, you know, we'll have a study day for them, and we have a housework day and during the summer. And the kids go shopping with me. Now, they're old enough that they're learning, you know, how to shop and all. But I just can't operate without some kind of structure. But I know, I read this, I have a favorite author, her name is Elizabeth Gooch, and her books are kind of, you look at them at first and you think they're romantic novels, but they're more devotional stories about real life and families. They're beautiful. She's the daughter of an Episcopalian priest, and probably a Christian. She has you can tell some of her doctrine's kind of messed up. But anyway, I just get little tidbits from her all the time, and she was talking about these children that were staying with their uncle, and he was an educator, and he said, okay, you can stay with me if you are here for lessons from 9 to 1. He said, from 9 to 1, you got lessons no matter what. The rest of the day, you can do whatever you want to. And I thought that was such a good balance because, okay, we got this structure here, so they feel good about themselves and they're learning, but then they have freedom over here. And I that's kind of what I've been going by this summer, is to have some structure but then some freedom too.
How you use this, and once you have it on the list, then what do you do with it?
Well, the main thing is, it seems like the process of doing it, and I try to do it at each season of my life or year of my life, because life is seasonal and it changes, the priorities change. The main thing it does is when I get it all written down, I just realize, okay, if I don't do this right now, it's okay, because my kids require so much emotional. If I can't do much of that, I can do it later, but it's not a big priority right now. I don't feel guilty. That's the main thing, you know. I realize if I get these priorities done and I don't get this done, well, we'll survive. And for me, like practicing the piano, I wrestle with that because, see, I could put it first. You know, and my piano teacher from college came here this year and he inspired me all again. I thought, oh, I'm going to practice 3 hours a day. I can't practice 3 hours a day at this season of my life. And so if I do that, and I think, oh, it's way down there, and I'll do what I can, and the Lord will just have to take care of the rest.
So that's what. So you make up your schedule.
Well, I don't use it every day. It just seems like if I do it every season and kind of keep in my mind, because I've done it. Yeah, it's just sort of if I don't, this season it's okay if I'm not real strong on hospitality, because we're redecorating the house, I can't feel guilty about it.
Yeah. Do you write out a day-to-do list? our day schedule?
Yeah, when I don't, I get real, you know what I mean? But if I just start writing it down, then write down how long and try to be reasonable about how long everything's going to take. The best thing to do is write it in order of priority, you know, and get the top ones done first. But I do it, yeah, definitely a daily do list.
And then you really discipline yourself to go by it.
Yeah. I'm probably over-disciplined. That's why I keep, focusing in on the measured tread and the rest that God gives us to rest.
So. Do you take time out, like for rest, for a nap?
Mm-hmm.
You must take the phone off the hook or do something.
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
The music minister will say, I've been calling you all day. And I say, oh. But, the times I felt guilty about that, I thought, well, I'll leave it on. Go ahead and rest. I get these dumb, salesman phone calls. Or a Mormon called one time, and I thought, trying to sell Mormonism or something. And I was like, oh, Lord, you must be telling me it's okay to do this for 30 minutes or an hour.